Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot of people said that they thought last week's was incredibly fine.
I thought it was really good as well. Esther had a problem with it.
I think immediately realising as I was saying it that I had absolutely zero grasp on any aspect of economics, and I thought that cutting stamp duty would invigorate the housing market and make houses much cheaper.
Did you say that in the podcast?
Yeah, I went on and on and on about it. And then I was listening back
was
to
that
thinking,
then in it?
Oh yeah, that was in it. You very, very nicely did not like do a big mansplain going.
I just thought Ben would remove it. I don't know what the fuck is my wife talking about.
I was so stressed about the hack and everything on your email and about the general kind of, I was quite jangly last week. And I just did that thing where you just have to say whatever comes up on your mind. And it was that.
That's what you're supposed to do in a podcast. Should we start?
Okay, let's go. Right, we've got a little bit of housekeeping at the top of this podcast.
We have.
In a rare fit of organisation.
As Ben said, welcome to Series 8.
We've got a running order for the first time.
And we're very excited because as sort of happened last week, but we were in a...
bad state.
We were
in a bad place.
About because I'd been hacked and all that, which we'll come to. We were all excited because there was loads of stuff in the papers and we didn't really get to it. This week, it's so much stuff in the papers.
Even more.
That we have to really crack on.
Yeah, we do. So, housekeeping, number one.
Number one, the builders.
Oh, yes. Okay. Apologies. Literal housekeeping.
Literal housekeeping.
They're knocking our house down.
The room above us, they've taken the roof off. They've done it in a morning, which seems a bit fast. Seems a little bit quasi-Kwarteng. Right, off with the roof, pow! You know, I thought normally they'd have been a bit more. They chucked up a tarpaulin and they've pulled all the slates down. So if it starts raining, we're going to get wet. But we previously, with the building next door, we'd asked the builders next door to stop for an hour while we did our podcast. But these builders are on our money. So they're just going to crack on through.
They're on our time.
If it goes, if there's a really loud bang.
That's
sorry,
what it is.
Sorry.
Second on the list is... a big deal for us, which is that John Witherow, who's edited The Times for about 10 years, has left.
Yes. I mean, it's not under a cloud or anything. It was announced in the paper this morning. I suspect, because people don't know these kinds of things, this might be the first, this podcast, that a lot of Times readers are hearing it.
Hmm. And also, you know, if you were just a reader of a newspaper, the editor changes, who cares? It's not really a big deal for the readers. It's a very, very massive, huge, big deal for everybody who works at the newspaper, particularly with John, because John became the editor of the Sunday Times in 1994. And then edited the Sunday Times for years and made
so long ago that he took over from Andrew Neil, who's 138 years old, and it's hard to imagine that he was ever a newspaper editor.
Exactly.
John took over from him, made the Sunday Times great.
He made the Sunday Times into the thing that you want to buy and read on a Sunday. And then there's going to be a new editor and new editors, however perfectly all right they are. They are always new. A new broom is never madly welcome in a newspaper.
Except in this occasion it is.
Is it?
Well, because he's going to be our boss. So it was great. Also, it hasn't been announced yet, but it's Tony Gallagher, who's been the deputy for a while. And frankly, I think the only man who could have taken over from John, a towering journalist, a 21st century
and
icon.
And also very handsome.
Very handsome. Really, really nice. So yeah. Sensible. I mean, it's great.
An excellent guy.
And
new editors do have a really annoying habit of firing everyone.
Almost everybody they fire, particularly columnists. I've met Tony once or twice. Don't really know how he feels about the columns, the podcast, everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, if this podcast isn't published on Friday morning, I think we'll know what Tony Gallagher thinks about the Corrons.
Well, fingers crossed. Do we want to, in our little housekeeping section, mention the competition to win?
Oh, yes, of course. Also, luckily this week, he can't find me this week because any of you who are subscribers will have received an email this week saying that Times Plus is being relaunched. The great thing for Times subscribers where you get... And this is not me advertising, it's just me advertising. You get, you know, all kind of events and stuff like that. They've relaunched Times Plus and they seem to have done it with lots of pictures of me. And it comes in and there's my picture from a while ago looking young and handsome. And then also there's a competition, the first new Times Plus competition. It's a competition to win dinner with me at one of my favourite restaurants. What about that, darling?
Well, if you want to sit opposite Giles while he fiddles with his phone for an hour and a half, be my guest. No, it's fun. It's like Giles is in his element in a restaurant. It's really weird.
Waiter! Bring me your finest capon
and the bottom
of the wine list.
He moans and moans and moans about how he doesn't know anything about food and he doesn't like food and he doesn't like restaurants and it's all boring. But when Giles is in a restaurant, it's like he sort of comes alive. And genuinely...
As opposed to on this podcast when I sit here like a turd.
It's really, really, really fun. So if you haven't entered the competition yet...
And I pay the bill.
And he pays the bill, and I won't be there because I have done restaurants with Giles for 10 years, and I am bored out of my skull with restaurants.
And so, frankly, are all my friends, which is why I have to have competitions with strangers.
I don't have to go, so I don't.
But listen, we're going to a restaurant called Brat with a Welsh chef called Thomas Parry, and it's just a brilliant restaurant.
It's so good.
It's in Shoreditch. It's super expensive. It's got a Michelin star, but it's also funky and hipsterish. It's really great. I think it's like four readers plus their partners, me and some cool marketing people,
and
I suspect.
Money.
And a big pile of money. And the competition is really easy as well. You just have to write, how great is Giles Corran in 100 words? Why I want to not really. It's just a button.
No, you just click a button.
You literally just click a button. And you don't have to like me at all.
Yeah.
And of course, so the second prize is dinner the next day as well with Giles Corran. But look, also the other thing I think we need to say, as John Witherow, our favourite editor, the best editor I've ever worked for, honestly, no shit. He's the first editor I've ever worked for who's made the paper profitable. And I've worked under Max Hastings at the Telegraph and at the Mail and stuff. Great, great editor. What you do with an editor when they leave is you bang them out.
Yeah. So they get up and they leave, they walk through the newsroom and it's incredibly emotional when it happens. And you bang them out and everyone sits at their desks and everyone whacks on their desks.
And we weren't in the office yesterday, so we weren't there for it. But we're going to do it here.
We're never in the office.
We're never in the office, but we did know Roland, my editor on the comment page, said it feels like there's going to be an announcement today.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to schlep in on the Northern Line just in case the announcement was John's doing another 40 years.
So we don't like John that much.
So we'll bang him out now.
Right, 3, 2, 1. No, it's not like that. You're doing it in the wrong pace. It's not like that. It's like this.
Is it?
Funereal. Yeah.
Oh. Is it?
Yeah, you've never been at a bang. What is this? Like your tenderizing steak. God, you get everything.
Okay, sorry. Is that really the...
You go like this.
Because I'm so important, I've never had to go in the office, whereas you've been a sort of desk flunky.
I have been a desk flunky.
What do we do?
You go like this. It's a funereal march pace. Dum, dum, da, dum. No, wait, that's the Star Wars music. That's Darth Vader's.
Take a long time to tenderize a fucking steak at this
point. John Wither is nothing like Darth Vader. I promise.
He's a bit like Darth Vader.
Okay, as mentioned before, I mean, we do just have a complete embarrassment of riches, and my running order is like now completely.
Well, we got to go with Keir, because you know Keir's speech yesterday. During it, I was in the car driving. I can't remember where, back from a meeting on the way to get Sam from school or something, and texting you. Obviously, I pulled over and put the handbrake on, and then texted you to say that I was going to be 10 minutes late or something. Are you listening to Keir's speech? It's brilliant.
Yeah,
and I'm basically a Tory these days, so you know that's a thing, and I just thought it was absolutely great, and it was measured, it attacked the right things, And suddenly he looks like he's going to be prime minister. I do slightly somewhat feel, and I was saying this on Times Radio this morning, that with these Tories, probably Jeremy Corbyn could have been prime minister. I don't think he actually needed someone as good as Keir. The lack of a Blairite personality, of a messianic, that doesn't matter. That was possibly a weakness of it. We don't know. Blair needed that to get him over the line. Keir's just going to pick up this administration.
Voting is often about, you know, governments have voted out, not necessarily governments have voted in. And an election is about getting your own voters to turn out for you rather than expecting people to switch sides. The thing about the Red Wall, where families who'd voted Labour for, you know, 150 years suddenly voted Tory, that was a real anomaly. I mean, there was a small amount of sort of swing voters who will kind of, you know, change their minds. But mostly, you know, you vote the way that you vote and you either turn up to the polls or you don't.
That's just some searing political analysis. It's nearly as good as your stuff about stamp duty last
week. I was waiting for you to say that.
The housing crash this week, the predicted housing market crash,
yeah,
is entirely due to time.
It's my fault.
To my podcast listeners listening, yeah, to you talking about, oh, stamp duty will make the house prices come down.
I literally can barely count to 20. But it's, look, also, it's really, really, really confusing.
It is confusing. So Keir Starmer is now very, he's just in 2025, he's probably going to be prime minister. We had this budget, which on the face of it looked quite good for rich people like us. And I thought, woohoo, that a budget should be so helpful to us by lowering the top rate of tax, by postponing the 6% yeah, corporation tax dividend, by taking off the 1.25 national insurance rise. Now, all these things just giving us, you know, tens of thousands of pounds more money. It's obviously bad for everyone else. And it was terrible.
Which most people in our bracket have already factored in to their financial planning anyway. So it's like,
this isn't one of those podcasts where we pretend to be poor. I'm sorry.
No, we earn a living and we've got some cash.
You really can't.
It's sort of patronising and stupid to pretend that
like all those Guardian podcasts where they'll pretend not to have a gleaner.
I thought you said a gleaner. And I was like, oh, another member of staff. A gleaner. What do they do? A cleaner. Yeah. No.
So what we have is basically 2.5 years until this government is thrown out.
I know.
Take advantage of all the tax benefits we've got and then put the money in the bank and...
Give the money to charity, darling.
Give the money to charity, I mean.
Fuel Poverty UK. It's an excellent charity. If you've got a few spare beans left
and
over, give it
to them.
And
cheer on the arrival of Keir. But why is it significant for us that Keir Starmer will become Prime Minister?
Because he's our next door neighbour. Yay! I keep saying that Vicky Starmer, who's his wife, is my friend. She's not. She just walks past my house sometimes and she's like forced to smile at me.
I wrote a column a year ago saying, I don't mind Keir Starmer. He lives up the road. My wife likes his wife. And Vicky emailed to say that...
No, I don't.
She likes my...
She's weird.
She likes my wife.
Oh, good.
They're friends. And I see... Keir was... I met Keir next door at the party, literally next door to our house. He lives a couple of doors up. You see him plonking around the place in his big shiny shoes.
And in his Keir. Driving his Keir.
Driving his... Yeah.
Keir... Sorry, can I just reiterate this? Keir Starmer drives a Keir.
Does he actually drive a Keir?
Yes.
Have we done this before on the podcast?
Yes.
About 7 times.
I know, but it's just crazy. It's like I drive a car called an Esta.
Yeah. No, I understand why you think it's funny. I'm going to hop into my Ford Gyli and off I'll go.
It's just so mad that the range of cars that he could pick to drive. He chose a Kia. Sorry, it's really not that funny.
But you actually drive a Kia as well.
I do, but my name's Esther. Although I did used to drive a Fiesta.
You did.
Esther in her Fiesta. That's quite funny. But I didn't choose that car.
No.
You chose that car. Okay, let's move on from this. So how could you possibly turn this into a column?
Oh, come on. I mean, so he is the third Labour leader in a row to be our neighbour, isn't he?
Yeah.
Corbyn's constituency abuts ours at the top of the road just by Tufnell Park. I was his neighbour in a street called Whitehall Park. Neither of us lives there now, so that's fine. And he was four doors down from me in the 90s. So he was you see him around here. I saw him up at the Tufnell Park football with Sam playing there and got a selfie with him after the last election.
Corbyn Miliband.
And Miliband lives literally two streets
he's
up.
He's now got three or four kitchens, actually.
Yeah, he's got so many. He's had to buy the house next door because he's just being no room to sleep in the kitchen house.
Because of all the kitchens.
And they've all been hopeless losers who are unlikely to become leaders. Although, frankly, this government has made it look so awful, that itself looks so awful, that Ed Miliband is looking really statesmanlike and great at the moment, I think.
Oh, Ed Miliband's all right.
Yeah.
We met him at that party. We met him with Keir Starmer. He's lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
And with Alistair Campbell.
So basically, I could just write a column about... Because when Boris came in, I wrote... And Cameron and I sort of... All of them, I found ways to write columns. Oh, it's somebody a bit like me. has become
the
prime minister.
The thing is that if you do that now, then you've got nothing to write when he does actually become prime minister.
Or
we'll all be dead, or the dolphins will be in charge by 2025, let's face it.
Exactly. So it's okay, just like, look, let's move on. Really?
So maybe. Okay,
you can offer some insights into Keir Starmer, no?
What insights do you have into Keir Starmer? He's like a nice policeman.
Yeah.
Is that what you're
going to... What's going on here then?
Yeah.
Hello. There'll be more from Esther and me in our kitchen after a short interlude. But to find out what I wrote about in the end, why not pick up a subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times and enjoy 1 month absolutely free? Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea. I've been promised that this will take you to an amazing offer, rather than just a website created by Ben randomly containing all my broadcasting mistakes. Although I'm sure that exists somewhere, it's just going to be up to you to find it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now I've got here.
Stories.
I've got too many stories.
What about? Think you can beat a chimpanzee in a fight? You want to do that one?
I think actually, if you were going to go do a serious one,
yeah.
I think your woodcock one. Let's just briefly go through the woodcock story. Have you got it there, love?
Leaving aside the word, the fact, the sort of the hilarity in the name. It's, you know, with wood and cock.
Oh, grow up!
Both mean the same thing. Sorry. How much cock would a woodcock cock if a wood suck could suck cock? I had a picture. This one I did cut out. Not one. Picture of Gwyneth Paltrow gold. Can we come back to that?
Yeah, if we absolutely have to.
Holding on to her boob. Teeny weeny.
Another day.
Boob. There we
another
go.
Another 50-year-old lady in the paper with no clothes on.
Well, should we just briefly talk about that then?
Well, we can. If
was that going to make it difficult for Ben to edit? Should we go woodcock and then come back?
No, let's do naked ladies first. So
I take my woodcock out of my hand.
It's a sort of an assault on the senses today because we've got Helena Christensen and Gwyneth Paltrow following quite hot on the heels of Jennifer Lopez a few weeks ago advertising her booty balm, and she was 50 as well, and she did this photo.
So Helena Christensen, 53.
Yeah,
and 53, and Gwyneth, 50, so Helena Christensen has posed in a bikini.
I think it's knickers, isn't it? Kind of underwear.
And a bra. I don't know. It didn't look, darling. I just flicked past it. To the loo with it. Helena Christensen, 53. But posing in her bra and knickers. And everyone going, oh, she looks so amazing. And yeah, fine. Any woman in her bra and knickers looks okay. But she's a 53-year-old woman who is not fat, who's all in proportion because she was a supermodel. She's lying down and she's blast lit. Under which conditions, even I would look fine. Wouldn't I, darling?
No. It's not fair. It's not fair. Gwyneth Paltrow works out for 1 hour every day, 6 days a week. And I know this because I looked it up the other day. Jennifer Lopez works out for, like, they all do that. They have a special diet. They work out for it. It is their job to look like that. And when you, it's a completely unrealistic thing, and it makes other people. It makes women, it just makes women feel bad.
So Gwyn is just sort of showing off. She's, I mean, I feel so good turning 50, the mother of two said ahead of the shoot.
Yeah. I mean, it is and it isn't. So it's really hard because this is advertising for, so Goop, her lifestyle wellness, whatever brand you want to call it, sells a vast, vast number of kind of lotions and potions and powders and, you know, smoothie mixes and retreats and exercise plans.
Which purport to make you look like that, presumably.
Which you will not in a billion years, because Gwyneth Paltrow is the American princess and she was born looking like that, and yes, she works very hard to look like that, but if you don't already kind of look like that, you're not gonna fucking look like that. And I think it is,
you're true, they're doing Helena Christensen at 53, they're doing Jennifer Lopez at 50,
and sorry,
they're not really doing Anne Widdecombe at 84, are they?
The other thing I want to say is that
coffee,
at least if you are, you know, if you're 50 or you're 42 like me, you can look, there are pictures of, for example, you know, just picking someone randomly, like Lily James, sort of looking lovely in the newspaper or whatever. She's 27 or whatever she is. So you go, okay, that's a, look, you can dismiss it because you can go, well, yeah, they're good 27. Point. Of course, they're going to look like that. When you are confronted by a woman who is 50 who looks like that, you just think, oh, fuck. Broadly speaking, in a very kind of atavistic way, the thing that is prized about women is
youth. So Gwynnie's sort of, Gwynnie, who you ought to be excited about because she's successful and rich and quite funny and articulate and great, yeah, isn't that? She's saying, I've got all that, and look at my boobs.
And look,
they're
at
still
my,
great.
Look at my boobs.
Yeah.
And look at how long and lean I am and my wonderful clear skin and my lustrous hair. And it's a real problem, and I try not to engage with any of it and or catch sight of my face in a mirror, and then everything's fine.
You look very nice.
Well, that's very,
you
that's
look very nice, painted gold. Naked, dead on. So going back to my
cock.
Wooden cock. No, look, this is a column I could write again, serious, but again, tricky politically and socially. The decline of one of Britain's most enigmatic and endangered birds could be reversed after the government promised to rethink rules on shooting. Conservationists say recreational shooting is a key cause of declines in native populations of the woodcock, a secretive bird that lives in woodlands and feeds at night on earthworms using its long bill. Now, woodcock is a kind of game. Shouldn't be a thing, should it? Woodcock's a bird. Where we live in Gloucestershire, the local farmer has a shoot. He shoots pheasants. He shoots some partridges. He will not allow anyone at his shoots to shoot teal, woodcock, snipe, hare, anything like that. It's just these pheasant raised birds. Other shoots they do let them. So these toffs go out to shoot. At this time
they're
of year,
they're not all toffs.
Okay, fine. They go out to shoot grouse. They go out to shoot pheasant. They reckon if a woodcock comes over, you can't stop them. That's why woodcock comes over at this time of year. Pow! They shoot it. Oh, that's a bit more interesting. And these birds are in decline. And it seems to me that at the very least, you should be like our local farmer and say, "We'll shoot the stocked birds. We won't shoot the wild birds." What they're hoping to do now, the Union of Conservation for Nature with its red list, is to persuade hunters to shorten the season so that you can only shoot them for a month in December. And Chris Packham, who I have historically, you know, the nature guy, mm-hmm. who I've historically thought he was a bit of a sort of hysterical animal, right? It's a bit overdid it a bit, and mm-hmm. I felt you should let the country be the country. And we do have a foot in the country. We have a foot in Gloucestershire. I don't feel as Londoners we should go up there and go, you can't do this and you can't do that. You can't. So you, okay, fine. If you want to hunt, if you want to shoot, we don't do it, but you get on with it. Packham is saying he will take this. I don't mind. Okay, if you're going to shoot. It's not really what we want. Obviously, what we want is for them. Well, Packham would like everybody to stop killing animals for pleasure. Mm-hmm. He can't achieve that. Let's give the woodcock a break for a month. Mm. And I just started to think about it, and I think, I've been a coward. I've been a weed. Killing animals for fun is awful, and I should say so in the paper. And I should start with the woodcock story and say that I live out there and say I've been on shoots, though I've never shot anything. When we first went to the countryside, I bought myself some. I couldn't go quite to the plus fours, but I bought myself kit that I could go shooting in.
You bought yourself some wellies.
I bought myself some wellies, it's true. I've used them. They're very handy for unblocking the drains. But yeah. And I actually bought the wrong kind of wellies. I went out on my first shoot with my hunter wellies, and everyone laughed as my feet got really, really cold because hunter wellies are shit.
You nearly lost the toe.
I nearly lost. Did I? That's the gout.
No.
and the endlessly kicking the wall with my rage.
Yeah.
But it was very, very cold, and they all laughed and said that I should have neoprene insulated ones, and I've got them now, and they're
so
called...
You scurried off.
They're called chamo. So I've got these posh ones.
You've got chamos?
Yeah. Right. They're about 400 quid, which, thank God for Liz Truss, I'm able to afford at the moment because of the tax.
Yeah, but, for the next 18 months.
But anyway, so I went along, and I went along with these things, and everyone's wearing plus fours and sort of gaiters and deerstalker hats and shit like that, and carrying their ancestral over and under Holland and Holland Edwardian silver-barreled 250 grand guns and going, rah, and all with their lovely...
spaniels.
And their beautifully trained spaniels, and it's all really engrossing. And I went along on these shoots thinking maybe one day I'll pick up a gun and shoot something. And the first one I went on... There were lots and lots and lots of pheasants, and we were in a sort of bank, and they were flushed out by the beaters from the wood overhead. But where we were standing, we had a sort of hill behind us. So as they came over and got shot, it wasn't a long gap as they gradually fell through the air, because they fell and hit the hill, if you can imagine what I'm saying. So it was blam, thump, and they were very good at shooting, and it was just...
raining.
It was like watching a war.
Yeah.
And it was just, and there was just these chickens falling out of the sky, and I thought, this is horrible. And I haven't said so because... my friends do it, and my brother-in-law does it, and our local farmer does it. Jeremy Clarkson, who I like and is a neighbour and a mate and a colleague, shoots these things, and he loves it, and he thinks it's great. So many people do that I feel if I came out against it, I'd be very unpopular with my friends. I think I'd be very popular with the readers. I think it would play well. It would clickbait. Do I dare do it?
As paid members of the RSPB and as...
That's our son who's a paid-up member of the RSPB.
Yeah, but who do you think pays for his membership?
Oh, shit. Is that me?
Yeah, it's in his name because our son is a passionate fundraiser for the RSPB. And whenever he does like a cake sale outside or in the annual street party, he always raises money for the RSPB.
His first word was duck.
The funniest thing I've ever heard him say was he pointed at a pigeon and said, "Look at that chicken." And it was so funny.
I've also just realised we don't know whether our new editor shoots or not.
Oh my God. That's the thing. When I was at the Evening Standard...
Because that's like...
Veronica Wadley was my editor when I was at the Evening Standard. And there was a list, I'm not joking, there was a list pinned up on the wall of things that you should never mention because she hated them. And it was true. Like someone oh God, I can't remember now. But
I remember at Tatler, Jane Proctor, the editor then, a great editor, but a sort of a tyrant in her own way, like editors all are. She had once, she didn't like French words. So in theory, you shouldn't, you know, as we all know with the you and non-you, you shouldn't say toilet, you should say loo, and you shouldn't say...
mirror, you should say looking glass.
But this extent, I remember I wrote my first piece I wrote for them, and I wasn't allowed to write cliché. And they went, "No, it's French." I go, Jane said, "We'll ask her." "No, no, you can't talk to her."
I remember on Veronica Wadley's list, either you must mention or you shouldn't mention was Benenden, because that's the school that she'd been to. But I don't know if like you should mention it or you shouldn't.
Under the great John Witherow. I'm sorry, no.
Everyone's going to tell me I'm wrong about the tempo.
I don't know. They're going to say we're not really journalists.
We're not.
Little fuckwits from North London. No, under the great John Witherow, though my previous comment editor, before my current one, was a chap who was very, very worried about pissing off the editor. And I said something about my Jaguar, and I didn't like Teslas of whatever. You can't. And he said, "John's got a Tesla." And I literally did take it out. And one of the things I'm looking forward to now that John's gone, although I'm not glad he's gone because he was a great editor and he's a good friend and he made the paper great and I wish he would stay another 10 years.
And he's very handsome.
Is, I know about you and your thing for John.
It's not just me. It's everyone. 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 For everyone who meets, every woman who meets John Witherow falls a little bit in love with him. Just a fact.
Oh, well, okay, fine. Sure.
Like George Clooney. Like the George Clooney of newspapers.
Right. We're overdoing it. He's going to see through. Tony's very handsome. But the thing is, does Tony shoot and does he drive a Tesla? Because if Tony doesn't drive a Tesla, I can stick it to fucking Elon Musk.
Right. Well, let's stick that one behind.
So we wait until we found out whether the new editor shoots before I come out against shooting.
Against shooting. Good plan. Exactly. Fine. Well done.
A little insight for you there into the workings of newspapers. I've got one here. Would you know what I was talking about if I said, I've written just a note that says chess cheat, comma, up the bum.
I don't know what the up the bum, I mean, you're just so childish with your up the bum and woodcock and everything. That doesn't really surprise me that you could find, hang on. What did he put something up his bum that helped him cheat?
Well, this is the suggestion.
Okay. I find chess so boring.
Yes.
I skip past
until
it.
You learn that the way you cheat in chess, apparently, potentially, according to Magnus Carlsen, the great world grandmaster number one, who refused to play against some guy who's 18, who I think's Russian, who admitted cheating once before. Carlsen can't prove that he's cheating. But Carlsen, we live in a world now where computers are better at chess than people. So the world number one, whenever beaten, will admit that he could be beaten by a computer and assume the person must be going to a computer. And this kid beat him, and he claims to have thought, well, he was playing every single move he played was the move a computer would have done. It's computer chess. It's not human chess. He's cheating. How does he get the signal? Puts a sex toy up his anus.
Yeah.
Is what is alleged. And then someone in another room, because they get frisked for every kind of electronic. Someone in another room is like playing the game on the computer and sending messages up his bum via this like rabbit or whatever they're called. I thought, ooh, I could get into chess. And then I thought, the only ones I've ever seen, and I haven't ever used one because I'm massively square, as you know. How many programs do they have? I mean, presumably it's just fast and slow and a few different kinds of pulses. There's potentially 78 billion potential chess moves. How do you like keep buzz, you're just sitting there while your ass is going buzz, 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 buzz. Okay, that's F, buzz, 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 four. So it's bishop, knight, four to queen, three, buzz, 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 buzz. You've probably come halfway through that, like, ooh. And then you go, and then if you didn't quite get it, how do you go, I didn't get that. And then it's buzz, 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 buzz. And I just struck me as fucking hilarious.
As you're describing it, it strikes me as like, why don't you just get better at chess? Like if you're like, rather than kind of like think of all these ways to cheat, why don't you just apply yourself to just being better at chess?
Or why don't you make it compulsory to have a thing up your bum while playing chess, which is constantly going so that nobody can get in there and go, what if you hacked? Up. What if you hacked this guy's bum, and told him to do other moves? So it was all going all over the place, and he's got this. He's just got to get this thing out of his bum, and he's. You know what I mean? It could make chess finally get back on the TV for the first time since the days of Karpov and Kasparov.
I am reading Ben McIntyre's book about Colditz at the moment, and one of the things that they talk about quite a lot in Colditz is something called an arse creeper, which is basically an empty cigar tube that they stuff with maps and money for their escape routes. So I've just got to the point
and they
where
put up their bums.
And they put it up
Say
their
what bums. You like about the British officer class, but it's not afraid to put things up its bum.
Yeah.
That's because public schools made this country great.
I've just really had enough of thinking about men with things up their bums.
Cigar tubes are long.
They cut them in half, you idiot.
Right. Oh, that'd be sharp. Yikes. You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
It's a Wireless Studios production for The Times, produced by Ben Mitchell. You can listen to us on the Times Radio app or download from wherever you get your podcasts. To find out what I wrote about in the end, you can pick up a copy of The Times or get a digital subscription. And by searching thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran Has No Idea, you can access a special offer just for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.